Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Coming up on Game On tonight, we're live in South Africa ahead of Saturday's first Lions test against the Springboks.
Watson to Liam Williams, good step. I need some support.
Oh, maybe, maybe not. Liam Williams looking all around. Where's that support now? It's come from Jonathan Davis. Now Elliot Daly, show those wheels. Inside to Davis. Inside and out. It's got to be finished. It is finished. Sean O'Brien.
After Tipperary stole the show last weekend, we look ahead to this weekend's Camogie Championship with Aoife Murray.
And the referee blows the full-time whistle. Kilkenny are the Littlewoods Ireland's league champions 2021.
Nadine Doherty guides us through the complexity of the ladies' football championship.
Hannah Goni Goverley, Agus Hubert Hilburn, Son O'Hanna, Agus Nesh, Nishigan Melissa, Agus Eshin Schultz, Chastanson, Agus Borgen, Fatta, Agus McCurkey, Kayla, Orlathin, Gwashach Duntuch, and over in Fadjantiga Hannah Looney.
And Sligo Rovers' David Cawley and Cork City's Sarah McKevitt joins to talk about the SSC Artricity's common goal.
Bulger plays it infield. Chance for the shot here. Oh, it's an absolute rocket! An absolute rocket of a goal by David Cawley.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So we're going to start with rugby because the draw for next season's Champions Cup has taken place today and has put Leinster in Tier 1 of Pool A alongside Montpellier and Bath. Ulster are also in Pool A facing Claremont or Vern and Northampton in Tier 2. It's Pool B for Munster and Connacht, with Munster joining Castres and Wasps in Tier 1 and Connacht with Leicester and Stade Francais in Tier 2. The tournament will take place in the same 12-pool format as last season. But it is Lions time, and the team was announced earlier on today for that first test against the Springboks. Robbie Henshaw, Tadhg Furlong and Jack Conan will start for the British and Irish Lions on Saturday. Tadhg Byrne and Conor Murray have been named as replacements. We are joined now on the line from South Africa by Michael Corcoran. Michael, we're going to get into the team in a minute, but first of all, how are you getting on?
Marie, hi. Everything is actually going quite well, to be fair about it. You know, there's been a lot of concern, I think, by people from outside the country, A, about COVID and COVID numbers, and B, about civil unrest. But as I flagged previously when I spoke to you about it, that's all taking place up in Gauteng, you know, Johannesburg, Pretoria, civil unrest in Durban. That's over 1,500 kilometres away from where we are right now, down in the Western Cape in Cape Town. So that, you know, obviously we had COVID down here in Cape Town, but the hospitals are coping with it. It's not the high numbers that they have up at the other end of the country, basically. So, you know, from that point of view, there aren't any fears. There are people out and about. There is a nightly curfew of 9 o'clock. You've got to be in off the streets local time. All of the restaurants are closed by 8 o'clock, and there's an alcohol ban 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you just adjust, you go for dinner earlier, you're back in your room way earlier to do some work if you need to do some work, and we've all been getting a good night's sleep, thankfully, so it's good. You know, from that point of view, make the most of it, and you convert to take advantage of the situation here.
And I'd imagine, just given the fact that there was COVID within the camps as well, that it is very strict just even trying to get to deal with them, to see them, to do your media work and to even go to the games.
Yeah, like, we're in a situation where, you know, since I arrived last week, I've had 3 PCR tests now, including one this morning. In fact, I just got another negative result back in the last 20 minutes. And I need the negative result for to go to the Lions training camp, which is in Arabella down near Hermanus, which is about an hour and a half away from here, to do a socially distanced interview with management and players. And it's a similar situation. I went to South Africa training the other day, and it's you're checked for your temperature and everything like that before you go in there too. And before we're allowed even into the stadium for the broadcast of the match on Saturday, we have to undergo another COVID test on Friday. You get a text on Friday to say, this is a friendly reminder, as if there is such a thing, to tell you that your next COVID test is due at, and mine is 11 o'clock on Friday morning. So from Friday of last week until, you know, the match on Saturday, I will have been PCR tested four times, and everywhere you go, your temperature is checked and everything. So, like, there are, it's just a way of life right now, basically. But that's the bubble in which we operate, and certainly the teams can't go out and about. I was talking to Razzy Erasmus at their training session the other day, and you know, we can't even meet for a cup of coffee because they're in their own bubble. They can't go outside their own hotel. They've brought their families into the hotel to spend the next couple of weeks there with them. And the Lions, as I said, are locked away in a golf and country club down near Hermanus. And they've got everything on site for them too also. So, you know, the hotel is completely locked off to outside visitors, even to people like me who are negative tested. We've got to do all of our media activity in an outdoor setting.
Right, well, I suppose these are the lengths people have to go to in order for the Lions test matches to go ahead, and they are going ahead very, very shortly as well. Saturday evening from 4:45, we'll be live on 2FM with our coverage of the first test, and we will have yourself and Donal Lenihan on commentary, so I think everyone will be looking forward to that. But let's talk about the team, Michael, because was one that there was a huge amount of speculation about, and even Warren Gatland said that it was the hardest one he's ever had to pick.
Yeah, and it's kind of, when Warren says that, you know exactly what the story is. He said he asked all of the coaches who were with him, the assistant coaches, to come to a selection meeting on last Sunday and come with their starting 15 plus the replacements. Now, he gave a very, very interesting statistic during the course of the press conference earlier, where he said they had all agreed on four of the eight forwards, and they had all agreed on three of the seven backs. So, you know, add the two of them together, that's only seven of the 15. Everybody was in agreement that these particular seven should be in the team, and everything else was up for debate. Neil Jenkins said to me the other day that they were expecting that the meeting would last an hour, maybe an hour and 20 minutes. It went on for two hours. And, you know, when Warren Gatland says it was a robust conversation, you know, he's also said, like, that it's not his team, it's the coaching staff who picked the team. Everybody says, oh, this is Warren Gatland's team. It isn't. You know, it's an approach that he's had for years, where he includes everybody else, basically, in the decision-making. And he's a good man to have a debate with. You know, he doesn't come with a set mind, he comes with an open mind, and that's really good, and that's seen in the performance of the players on the pitch.
One of the players that unfortunately didn't make the starting team is Conor Murray, and it must be quite a difficult period for him, because he goes from being a replacement captain for Alan Wynne-Jones to not starting in the first test team.
Yeah, I'm sure that emotionally it must be an incredibly difficult situation for him, you know, to be called aside in Edinburgh and asked, you know, would he captain the team, captain the, you know, the squad for the trip, and then, you know, in a scenario where he's called aside to be told that Alan Wynne-Jones, who's the original tour captain, is coming back in, and now he's been left out of the starting 15. But you know, the situation is, I think that Ali Price has been terrific, you know, in the matches that he's played, and it just says a lot about the type of style that the Lions want to play in terms of how they want to take on South Africa. And this isn't maybe not necessarily the best 1-15. You know, I mean, we've seen over the years that rugby has increasingly become a 23-man effort, and we'll see that, you know, when the Springboks unload their bench as well early in the second half. So, you know, there's been huge fluctuations over the years between the fellas who've been selected to play the first test, to the second test, to the third test. You know, there are other players there, for example, like Josh Adams, who'll probably feel hard done by as well. He's been left out, and left out of the match at 23-2. So everybody's got a part to play, basically. And as I said, I mean, if the Lions are going to win on Saturday here in Cape Town, they're going to have to use all 23 players, and obviously Conor Murray on the bench along with Owen Farrell and Liam Williams can make a massive difference when they come on.
What about Alan Wynne-Jones, though, to go from dislocating his shoulder and potentially been out for quite a long time to being back and starting that first test?
It's. I mean, you know, we call him the Lazarus man. I mean, he's the miracle man. That's the names that I've seen thrown around the place for him. I mean, this is his 10th test game in a row. And I mean, to captain the Lions like this against South Africa is sensational, to be fair, you know. And I was massively disappointed for him when he got injured and was initially ruled out. I'm delighted for him, to be fair, that you know, he's back in, albeit at the expense of Connor. But, I mean, Alan Wynne-Jones, the most capped player in world rugby, has been around for ages. I was going to say decades, but that would be disrespectful. He's been around for ages. And, I mean, he's been a leader of men, regardless of what team that he's played with. And he's just a real totem pole figure, you know, when it comes to playing against teams. And certainly, you know, put him into the second row there alongside Mauro Itoje. That's a really hard-working unit there. I mean, he's a sensational player, even better person. And I would say, you know, he worked every hour that was available, along with all the medics, to get him fit, to get him back in a plane, to get back out here to lead the Lions in the opening test. And he gets that opportunity on Saturday.
Yeah, I was listening to him today in his press conference, talking about how much it means to him. And, you know, he was saying he's been working at this, trying to get to the Lions again for 4 years. So it just shows where his focus has been for the last number of years and how much he's wanted this. So it is quite nice to see him back there again. But it's great as well, Michael, for Robbie Henshaw, Tadhg Furlong and Jack Conan to be in there as well.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that with Robbie Henshaw's hamstring problem, there was a concern whether he was going to be back or otherwise. But, you know, it was good to see him get through 50-odd minutes against the Stormers here in Cape Town last week. So, I mean, I'm delighted for him, to be perfectly fair about it. It's very tough on Bundiaki that he's not involved. But people will say that Elliot Daly gives the Lions the option of attack from 13, and also he's got a big boot. And has a lot of pace there too. In terms of Tadhg Furlong, I think he was probably one of the first names down on the team sheet. I mean, he's the rock on which they'll build their scrum. And as Tadhg said to me when I was talking to him the other day, this is big boy rugby now, basically, from this weekend onwards. And I'm thrilled, I have to say, for Jack Conan. You know, a position in the back row, in the loose forwards, as they call it, was an area that's much, much coveted. And if you look at the quality of the players, you know, Sam Simmons, Tulupe Faletau, even Hamish Watson, who's on the bench, not involved at all. You know, Tadhg Byrne as well, who's on the bench. Jack Conan, it's just been fantastic for him. He's had a really good season from a Leinster point of view, from an Ireland point of view, and now he's a Test Lion. And I mean, that's just something that he's going to have for the rest of his life. You know, given the fact that he had the disappointment of the foot injury at the Rugby World Cup and was ruled out of that, I mean, it's just sensational that he's going to start in a Test game for the Lions this coming weekend.
It really is. So, Michael, are you feeling positive heading into that game now after seeing the Lions team?
I think the you know, in a three-game series, the first match is massively big altogether. People will say that the Springboks are slightly undercooked in terms of not having had an awful lot of game time together. So there's a bit of pressure on them. But I think the Lions will certainly sense an opportunity, given the fact that I think South Africa will improve as the series goes on, you know, the more they play together. But people must realise also the British and Irish Lions haven't actually played together as a collective unit either in any match. And they will feel that they have a big opportunity. If they can win the first one, they know the pressure is on South Africa to perform after that one and after next weekend. So I think it's key for the Lions if they're to win this series. I think they really do have to win this coming weekend. I'm quite positive, actually, to be fair, and I'm quite optimistic that the Lions will win the opening test.
Good to hear. Michael Corcoran, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I'm Marie Crowe and this is Game On. So after a busy weekend of Camogie Championship, I'm delighted to say that Aoife Murray joins us. Aoife, just overall looking at it, what were your thoughts on how it went?
I suppose, kind of went as expected to a certain extent, Marie. The usual winners there, Cork, Galway, Kilkenny and Tip. And I suppose, obviously, then there's big wins for the likes of Wexford, Waterford as well, and particularly, obviously, just getting over the line over Down by a point. So, yeah, I think it kind of went as expected.
Yeah, it's good to have it back in full flight and have so much of it as well. Let's start with Cork, because Cork are obviously a team that are going to see themselves as All-Ireland title contenders. They were facing Dublin. I think heading into this game, a performance really was what Dublin were looking for and Cork were looking for the win. What were your thoughts on what you saw from Cork?
For Cork, I think they looked quite settled with regard to that centre spine to centre field. From Amy Lee to Libby to Laura and up to that partnership, a relatively new partnership between Hannah and Aisling. And I thought, for me, that looked really set in stone and very comfortable. And you could see the other players really feeding off of that. And then for me, you could see Cork, for me, were making, shall I say, proactive decisions, and Dublin were making reactive decisions throughout the game and were chasing it really from the get-go. And it looked like they were just relying on Aisling Maher a bit too much up in that forward line. You could kind of see the oxygen levels just weren't there towards the end of the game, and they were making poor decisions. There was easier balls to give, but sometimes they were just getting it and hitting it up the field without possibly working it and taking that second. Now, you can equally say Cork didn't give him an inch right up to that final whistle, albeit I did think Dublin still ended the game positively, and you could certainly see a good level of fight there.
Yeah, well, it is going to take time. You know, when someone like Adrian O'Sullivan takes over and wants to put his stamp on things, it is going to take a couple of championships to get up to the likes of Cork, who've had Paddy at the helm for so many years and are just so much further down the road.
Yeah, and look, with Paddy there since 2012, I always go back to when he took us over, and just the exact condition that we were in. We were in no great shape. You know, we couldn't even do a squat, to be honest, Marie. And it took us a few years to get into that groove as well. Obviously, getting to the final in 2012 probably happened a bit too early in that process. So you have to give Dublin some time, especially with the likes of Donny there as head coach. I know Donny quite well, and he's certainly the man for the job. It's just going to take some time. The positives, though, at least the work rate and the effort seem to be there, and they're the things you can't really coach.
Yeah, that's for sure. And just in terms of Paddy, do you think he'll be happy enough with what he saw? It seems to be settling down quite a bit. But look, you know, a championship, it just moves so quick that you need to be at the top of your game from the get-go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I suppose, the positive there is you see like the likes of Orla Cronin coming in for the last few minutes, popping a ball over the bar. So now you've got that option there. I thought Linda Collins had quite a good game as well, who had never really finished a game, it seemed, in the league, and you could see her really beginning to come into it. For me, I think if he looks back, he's probably going to look at that centre partnership. He had tried Mackey and Aisling Thompson. It worked to a certain extent, but actually she's bringing more to the forward line now since she's moved up there. And I think when he looks at Hannah and Aisling, it's a super partnership. And for me, on Sunday, Hannah was my player of the match, Marie. I thought her runs up the field where Dublin couldn't handle them. One or two passes just slightly off, but at least she's doing the hardest part right.
So Dublin have Waterford next and Cork have Down. And Waterford and Down, actually, they're the teams that played each other and played an absolute cracker out as well, with Waterford coming out just a point ahead. But a seriously impressive performance from Down, and they will take a lot from that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think they'll go away disappointed. They had the game right there up to that very end, and I suppose it was a free in the sense of, I think, her left arm went across, and it was quite smart from Waterford's perspective of getting that point right at the end. I think Down will see it as a missed opportunity, Marie, but they certainly didn't look out of place at senior level.
No, they really didn't. So Dublin playing Waterford should be a good test for them as well, just when you think of teams that are maybe just a little bit off that top table.
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be, this weekend's probably going to be more important for a certain number of teams, and particularly when you look at that game between Waterford and Dublin this weekend. Waterford will be trying to maybe get one back with regards to the relegation playoff, Dublin pipping that by 1 point. I think Waterford could take a huge amount of confidence at it last weekend, where they were literally chasing that game and they snuck the win in the end. So that'll be a big boost for their confidence and maybe a bit more self-belief. I think that game should be a cracker, and it'll tell a huge amount about the table.
Yeah, really well. Look, we were talking as well last week about the form that Tipperary showed in the league, how they grew into it, how Bill Mullaney seemed to be finding his best starting 11 starting 15, getting that spine of his team right. Mm-hmm. You throw back in Orla O'Dwyer, and then you see Tipperary just blowing awfully away at the weekend, scoring 3.23, and Orla O'Dwyer with a hat trick.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, they were the highest scoring team of the weekend, I think, as well, which would be a massive boost to Bill and his backroom team and the players. Listen, they were doing pretty well without Orla O'Dwyer, and now she comes back in and scores 3-3, I think, on the day, and obviously caught them popping up at 9 points. But there's still a good spread of scores, and that's what I did like about Tip. They were still able to get a couple of players that won 2 points on the board. For me, they're coming in nicely. I've said it in the past, I do maybe they're 5 to 10 minutes off fitness wise, but listen, with the heat, you've no idea how a game is going to play out, and certainly they're moving definitely in the right direction.
Yeah, and when you have a free taker like Cot Devan, who came up with the 9 points as well, like they just seem like they're closing that gap right at the top. Look, I know it is a little bit to go yet, but now is a good time to be showing that form.
Yeah, and I think the weekend just highlighted the two different groups. There's almost three groups, Marie, coming out of this championship, where you've got the top two, which still are Galway and Kilkenny, and then you've got that chasing two-pack of Tip and Cork. As I said, I think last week, I really thought it was Tipperary's opportunity to take Cork in that Munster semi-final. And I think if they did, they'd certainly be good shouts for a semi-final or a final place. And then you've got that chasing pack. And I think for me, this weekend really is about the chasing pack, Marie, and what actually happens and who comes out with the wins for them.
Yeah, well, it is difficult for Offaly. They've actually had a difficult few weeks, really, you know, when you think about the high scores that they've shipped.
Yeah, but look, I suppose they're coming off of a pretty strong league for them. Listen, they've got Susan Ernan there as manager. It's a new setup, just a bit like Dublin. It's going to take a bit of time to gel and get their style of play across. So listen, for them, the most important thing this year is just performances and understanding maybe where they're going to be going in the next 2 to 3 years.
Now, Clare Aoife, so Clare Kilkenny, and we definitely said the words that Clare would have no fear of Kilkenny heading to Six Mile Bridge in particular, and they put up a great performance. They came up short ultimately, 22 points to 16, but still, when you think about Kilkenny and how much they have been tested, it's like nearly every game they're going out now, they've been really pushed to the pin of their collar. They come out the other side of it, which is a great sign of champions, but still, I think I asked the question last week, Aoife, is someone going to catch them? And look, they weren't caught, but they're definitely showing a few chinks.
I think, yeah, they're possibly taking the riskier approach to each game, Marie, but at the same time, they are worthy champions. They're still coming out the other end. Can they be caught? Anything can happen in a game. And listen, we've all seen these. For example, the USA soccer team getting beaten this morning by Sweden. Nobody saw that coming. So if Kilkenny keep playing the high risk, of course they can be caught. For me, though, they're still worthy champions. It was a bit of a shootout, though, really, between Gaul and Morley. 10 points to Gaul, 11 points to Morley. But for me, I'm really impressed with Clare. You can kind of see the style of play they're bringing, which is really built on the back of real hard work, which is the basis for any, I suppose, good championship year. And for me, they're going in the right direction. But Kilkenny always seems to just have that little bit extra right at the end of the game. Now, in saying that, it should have been 1-22. The referee, Andy Larkin, made a big mistake with regard to not letting the advantage go at 19 minutes. Like, Kilkenny literally had the ball in the back of the net and he had whistle blown for an advantage foul, or didn't play the advantage, sorry. And to me, it's that sense again where referees just really need to leave that play go. But I think Kilkenny will feel like they missed out on that goal.
Yeah, well, just a word on Chloe Murray there as well. So she got 11 points. Six Mile Bridge is obviously her home club. And I can say with authority that I don't think I was ever in that pitch when I was younger, when she wasn't there. She spent so much time up there. I'd see her when she was like 6-7 years of age, been able to puck the ball over the bar from both sides. And she's still doing it. Just unbelievable stuff from the Six Mile Bridge woman, Chloe Murray. Galway were in action as well. Look, it was against Westmeath. It was always going to be straightforward. Colin Murray did rest a few key players, though, obviously thinking a little bit further down the line.
Yeah, and look for me, it's championship. You should try to put out your, I suppose, your starting 15, if you want to call it. that you would be kind of expecting to be there, thereabouts in the latter end of the championship. Obviously, Cahill win for a little bit of a more of a mix. 3-16, a good score. Westmeath 1-5. I suppose, listen, if you're Galway, certainly where I'm coming from, you'd be looking at the goal and you're going, OK, we can't be shipping goals like this. But certainly, 3-16, a big scoreline, if you don't know who's flying it. Again, I just don't want Galway to start relying a bit too much on her. And it'd be good to see the other players kind of really ship in behind her.
Yeah, and Galway will play Clare next, and Westmeath have Kilkenny. Wexford and Limerick now was another one, and you're talking about the chasing pack, and they're very much part of that. So look, it was a very dramatic win for Wexford, 2-12 to 1-13 over Limerick. A bit of a blow for Limerick though, really.
Yeah, I think they've kind of promised quite a bit during the league, Maureen. I think we were all kind of expecting them to push on a small bit. Disappointing in the Munster final, and I think they kind of brought that form a little bit into the championship, but that's not to insult Wexford and what they achieved. Look, they had a pretty good Division 2 league campaign, but they are coming from Division 2 to play senior. There's a big gap there, and that's no insult to Division 2 Camogie, but there is a massive gap there for them to come up to senior after that campaign and to take a big win. It really set them off on a great, like, now they have a quarter final in sight, Marie, and that was so important about last weekend.
Yeah, and I was smiling when I saw Katrina Parrock coming on and scoring a goal after 20 seconds. They definitely have the experience there, but as you said, it's probably just that transition. They're coming again mm-hmm. after a couple of setbacks, and just to, as you said, to get that big win. And look, and potentially they could get another big win as well, because they're going to be going in with confidence up against an Offaly team who would have suffered a tough defeat against Tipperary.
Yeah, and look, I suppose it's the sense of can they keep that going for the weekend ahead. Certainly they're seeing it that they can get the win. Offaly are quite physical, so it'll be interesting to see how that kind of physical battle does play out. But certainly Wexford will be looking at this. If they can get one more win, they'll really have a foot in that quarter final, and that'll be a big plus for them for the year.
Yeah, I think we've gone through all the games for next weekend as well, just except for Limerick and Tipperary. And look, you're talking about it coming thick and fast and the importance of getting these wins. Limerick are in a difficult position now, coming against a Tipperary team that are just in flying form.
Yeah, I think they've unfortunately put themselves under pressure, and it's a position you don't want to be at your second round. Look, in saying that, there's a huge rivalry there between Tip and Limerick, and if Limerick won't be able to get up to the pitch of the game against Tipperary, then I would really worry for them for the latter end of the competition. I'm sure they'll go out and have no fear, but they're going to really have to nearly outperform the last few games for them to get to it, and Tip may have to drop their standards just a little bit. The way Bill is going about business, I can see Tipperary dropping how they've been going, their intensity and team play. I can't see them dropping that, and for me, you're really looking at a Tipperary win. It would be great for the competition. Now, as a player, I used to hate when people used to say this. It would be great for the competition for a surprise like Limerick beating Tip, because that would really open the door in that group one. But for me, I just can't see past a Tipperary win.
So when you think of the weekend, think back over the weekend, who impressed you the most, Aoife?
I know this is quite sort of the opposite, because they didn't win, but I was really impressed with Down. I thought the way they took on that senior championship was excellent. And the likes of, I suppose, Mallon and McCartan, they really didn't look out of place at senior level. And obviously, it's Sorkin McCartan scoring an excellent sideline cut as well. So for me, I was really impressed with them. I was quite impressed as well, obviously, with the likes of Wexford and in particular Clare. So, you know, they're the three teams that I would hope will get a win on the road, Clare and Down. And look, I do think the competition's quite open with regard to the chasing pack. I do obviously have quite a concern that there is those two, that there is a gap between the top four and the remaining pack. And it's a bigger question for me, even after watching the under-16 All-Ireland competition, Marie. You look back at that semi-final of the under-16s, you had Kilkenny beat Tip and you had Galway beat Cork, exactly the same as the last, was it two or three senior All-Ireland semi-finals. And it was Cork beat Galway in the end, and Cork coming out, just about coming out as winners. So the trend isn't changing at underage, Marie, and that's my biggest, I suppose, question, and that's why I'm really looking at that chasing pack to see what they can do this weekend.
Why do you think that is the case, that it isn't changing?
Well, I suppose, look, you have to look at history firstly. So you would expect to see the likes of Cork there with regard to our history. It's disappointing that you're not seeing the likes of Dublin with you know, mm-hmm. they're second in the middle table. It would be great to see them in those semi-finals at underage. It does come down to, I suppose, an awful lot of that work that's going in at underage. I can only comment on Cork Mogi at underage, Marie. But the work that Cork Juvenile Board has put in over the last 10 years has been phenomenal. There's constantly new clubs popping up, even in areas of West Cork where there's numerous Camogie clubs now. So they've put huge amount of effort. Donny Daly, what he has done for underage with regard to management has been phenomenal. And I do think they're looking at our junior team, our intermediate team and senior team, looking what those teams are doing, and they're putting it into practice at under 16 level. And obviously that has worked because we've been minor All-Ireland champions. Is it two in a row at this stage? And a lot of those girls now stepping up to the senior ranks, whatever level that may be. So I can only comment on Cork, but it's phenomenal the work rate that the juvenile board are putting in. And you could easily rest on our laurels with having a pretty competitive true senior team, Marie, but they really haven't. And I think for Camogie Association, they really need to start, I suppose, to examine of how can we bring these other counties up to that level.
Yeah, well, you seem to be getting it right anyway. And do you know what, Aoife? It sounds pretty simple. Put the work in and you get the rewards. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the weekend and we'll talk to you again next week. We're going to take a very quick break and then Nadine Doherty is with us to talk ladies football.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm Marie Crowe. We're turning our attention now to ladies football and I'm joined on the line by Nadine Doherty. So Nadine, the ladies football championship is going to continue this weekend with round three of the group fixtures determining the championship quarterfinals. Just what we need now, some drama and excitement this weekend. But we did actually get quite a bit last weekend and we got it in Donegal, Galway, because when you look at that game, Nadine, it wasn't one that we were expecting Galway to come out on top, but they did.
No, and I don't think many people were looking at Galway to come out on top. But look, it was a prime example of, I suppose, how the league counts for nothing. Unfortunately, you know, from a Donegal perspective, it's the same story come championship. You know, it's happened to them the last couple of years, starting off with a really disappointing result and just putting themselves in a really pressurised position now next week. You know, I felt it was a really frustrating day for the girls. You know, I felt they were really unlucky not to get something from the game. They really kept pushing until the very end, but they found that Galway defence. No, in fairness to Galway, I've been critical of them the last few weeks, but they were really well organised. Donegal found it really hard to breach them and became really frustrated and made poor choices on the ball. And I know it's a while since I had a go at a referee, but I did see that there were some really questionable and poor decisions for both teams. You know, there was a definite Donegal penalty I felt in the first half, and I just felt he missed a few scorable frees for both Galway and Donegal. But the difference for me was Galway got on with this, and you could see how frustrated the Donegal players were getting. And in the end, I felt that really had a big impact on how they finished the game. And I do think it's something that they have to look at going forward, because you are going to get days like that, that things aren't going to go well for you, and the referee is going to play a part. And you could just see them getting really, really frustrated.
Yeah, you could. But look, I guess when you think about Galway and that win over Kerry, the momentum that they were carrying into that, because it was such a hard-fought one, you could nearly sense that they were going to do something. And Donegal really should have been prepared for that almost. But look, as you said, they are where they are now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we did chat about that last week, that Donegal hadn't had a competitive game in maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And look, maybe that was a factor. But what I felt the difference between the two teams was Galway, I felt they were just stronger defensively. You know, they held that Donegal team to 1-11. And I mean, that Donegal forward line, as we know, is pretty incredible. You know, they got huge numbers behind the ball, especially in the second half. They double-marked Geraldine inside. I felt Karen Guthrie probably wasn't 100% fit. I think she had picked up an injury in the last while. And then you contrast that maybe to the Donegal defence. And I just feel, you know, you have Niamh Carr, you have Evelyn McGinley, you have Nicole McLaughlin there. They've been very consistent for Donegal all year. But I think in the other positions, they've been a little bit weak. And you know, it was something Galway really exploited. They scored 3-10. And another feature I felt between the teams, Galway just had more depth to their squad. And when you have that, it just gives you more options all over the pitch. You know, they're able to play a sweeper system because they have the players. They had that impact sub. I mean, Ailish Morrissey came off the bench and got two cracking goals and a brilliant point. And that also enabled them to switch Louise Ward to midfield. Whereas you look at Donegal, they don't have those options really, are that quality on the bench. And their forwards, you know, Karen Guthrie had a bit of an off day, and I felt their half forward line, their wing forwards, weren't on the ball. So Donegal struggled, and there was nobody really to come on, and it was really just Niamh Hegarty and Geraldine McLaughlin where the danger was coming from. But because Galway had enough quality in other positions, they were able to double team the girls and kind of sniff out that danger.
Yeah, very tough day for them. But look, it was a tough day for an even tougher day for Waterford, arguably. They shipped 6-12 against Dublin. It was expected that Dublin would progress, but conceding such a massive score is really, really difficult at this time of the season.
Yeah, it is. And you know what I would say, though, in watching that match, I mean, Waterford's no more than Tyrone, but I credit Waterford a little bit more because they always do it against Dublin, against the big teams. They'll go toe-to-toe and they will stay with teams. But, you know, they battled away in the first half. But, you know, it's always going to happen with Dublin. You know, they're going to go up through the gears and they finish with an easy one. And the other thing was, like, they had 10 different scorers. Carla Rowe was back and, like, it was as if she hadn't been out. And, you know, I know anything can happen in football, but it looks like Dublin are going to win in All-Ireland by implementing a rotation system. Like, Mick Bohan's biggest headache in the championship, I feel, is going to be keeping players happy with game time. And I don't really think he has to worry about any other team beating him. And to think that they have a massive chance of winning All-Ireland and Sinead Goldrick may miss the season with injury, like the best player in the country, and it doesn't affect your challenge, like, that is kind of scary going forward in terms of competition, you know.
Yeah, it really is. And I suppose we probably haven't got into it too much over the last while because there was so much change in that Dublin squad and it took a while for it to settle. But now that it has settled down and you can actually just look at the names that they have there available, it is pretty frightening. Would Cork, do you think they'll be able to challenge them? Like, they did score 6-14 themselves against Tipperary, conceding the same as Dublin, 1-10 against Tipperary.
Yeah, no, they did. And, you know, again, I feel that it wasn't a hugely impressive performance from Cork despite the scoreline. I think it flattered them a little bit, and I think they'll know that themselves. Again, more than the Dublin game, I suppose, while the result was never in doubt, I thought Tip acquitted themselves much better than the score would suggest. Cork, you know, they made a good few changes coming into the game, which is great for them and their squad, and they made changes throughout. Orla Finn didn't feature, you know, and they still put up 6-14. And we saw a different forward line, I suppose, that we've seen throughout the league. Sive O'Leary, she impressed again. But I think most importantly for Cork and their All-Ireland hopes, we saw Dern O'Sullivan come back in the final quarter. And I think her return to full fitness along with Emer Scally and Anya Terry, I think that would play a big factor in how they get on in the rest of the championship. But I feel the Cork are lacking in confidence. You know, I spoke about it before that Meath game. I thought that they'd find it tricky. And I think that perhaps that loss in the league final has damaged them a little bit more psychologically than I would have thought. You know, having pushed Dublin so far in that league match, they would have had huge confidence going into that semi-final. And when you look back at that match, they were really well beaten. So I do think it's going to be a huge battle for them to get back into an All-Ireland final because I would feel they maybe have a harder side of the draw. But look, you know, as Aoife alluded to there earlier about the Camogie, Kilkenny are hot favourites there, as are Dublin in the football, and anything can happen. But it's very, very hard to look past their pedigree at the minute.
Yeah, and then we were talking about drama at the start of the conversation. There was drama in Mayo and Monaghan as well, and it went to a free kick shootout with Mayo just edging it.
Yeah, such a random way, I suppose, to finish a game, but the association, I suppose, they don't want things going down to score difference or anything like that this year. They just want games settled. And, you know, looking at that game, I feel bad for Monaghan because it was such a difficult way to lose a game and go out of the championship, and they actually missed out on a place in the league final in Division 2 in the same manner. The game itself, it was intriguing. You know, it was one that I felt needed a goal for either team to really push on, and obviously that goal didn't arrive, so the game never really got going, and you could see both teams were almost afraid to make a mistake at times, and they played within themselves. And when you look at Mayo, you know, a draw for them would have been enough to get them through, and you'd wonder, especially in extra time, was that maybe playing at the back of their minds? But look, throughout the game as well, we were treated, ironically, to a free-taking masterclass by Ellen McCarron for Monaghan. You know, it's not often in women's football you see a player landing 10 points and 9 from frees and some unbelievable ones. And the unfortunate irony for Ellen, you know, she was the first player to take a kick and she missed. And I'd say that had a bit of an impact on the Manon team, maybe psychologically, the rest of the girls who took a free. But for Mayo, I felt Shauna Howley, I was delighted that it was her who got the winning score, because I thought she was brilliant throughout, and I think she has been a real class act for Mayo this season so far. You know, you always read about Rachel Cairns, and you know, she's a fantastic player, but she gets all the headlines for Mayo in terms of attacking. But for me this year, Howley has been a really welcome addition, and she's really come into herself, so she's been their most consistent forward.
Well, good for her. When Armagh, it's Amy Mackin that always gets the headlines, and deservedly so, against Cavan, 10 points.
Yeah, listen, we spoke about the impact Amy Mackin and Caroline O'Hanlon can have in game, and again, they were the difference this week. Amy Mackin getting player of the match, 7 from play, and it's not only that with her, like, it's her movement and her involvement in everything good that Armagh do. I also thought that Kelly Mallon was fantastic again this week. I think she's a fantastic player. I don't think she gets enough credit either, and the impact she has in that Armagh team. But look, Armagh definitely fancy themselves as championship contenders, and they're playing like a team brimming with confidence. They just put the squeeze on Cavan in the last quarter in what was a fairly competitive game, I felt. And if Armagh are to be caught, I suppose, in the quarterfinal or semifinal, whatever it is, I think defensively they really have to sort it out.
Okay, so that's all last weekend's action talked through. So this weekend, there's obviously a full schedule of fixtures, but there are some permutations here, and some matches obviously are going to come right down to the wire. Just talk us through what's going to happen this weekend with the games.
Yeah, so I suppose last year the LGFA decided not to have relegation in any grade or division because of the year that was in it. This year they've brought the relegation back in. So essentially, if you finish bottom of your group, you go into a relegation playoff, which consists of two semi-finals, I suppose you could call it. If you win your semi-final, your first game, you're safe, and then the two losers would go in and play a relegation final. So looking, I suppose, first at Donegal and Kerry, fine lines between, again with this relegation, it shows the fine lines between a match and a group. So whoever wins, they will go into the quarter final and they face Dublin, and whoever loses obviously wins the relegation playoff. So look, as I said before, there's massive pressure on Donegal, and over the last few years they've crumbled under that pressure. Kerry will be fiercely disappointed after the Galway game, and they really felt they deserved that win. So it's going to be a really, really tough battle, I feel. But I just feel, and I hope, anytime I tip Donegal to win, they don't. But I am going to tip them. And I just think they showed enough against Galway to put them in as favourites. I don't think Kerry have enough up front to exploit their defensive weaknesses. And I think Neve Carroll probably be given a man-marking job on Louise Mahertig. And I think that they'll cope with that. I don't think it'll be easy. And I think Kerry will also play a sweeper, learning from Galway the other day. But I really hope Donegal have enough. And, you know, listen, when Donegal play against Dublin, they always seem to lift their game and really give it a go.
So who else do we have then as well? So it's going to be Meath versus Tip, and then the winner plays Armagh Mayo?
Yeah, so we have Meath, Tip then. And again, two teams, when you look at them, they'd be in very different places, both physically, I suppose, and psychologically. You know, you look at Tip this year, they've just been dogged with injuries. They had retirements at the start of the year, and girls, you know, who were late back to the squad due to other commitments. But they're massive battlers. But, you know, you contrast that with the Meath team, who, for me, at the minute, are really on the crest of a wave. And they're playing like a team with a quiet inner belief that they're going to achieve very big things. I do think it'll be a win for Meath, but they'll have to work hard for it. I think, you know, I look at Tip's defence sometimes and it's nearly like a weak dam. You know, they can hold out for so long in a game, and then when it bursts like it did at the weekend, the damage can be really bad and it can overshadow what's, I suppose, generally a really honest battle and performance. And yeah, look, the winners go through to a quarter final, and the losers would face the losers of Kerry or Donegal.
And then Tyrone will play Waterford and the winners play Cork?
Yeah, that's it. You have Tyrone and Waterford. And I suppose looking at those teams, Tyrone would have been the happier of the two, probably, regarding their defeat to Dublin. You know, they were visibly thrilled with their defensive display for 30 minutes and a 10-point defeat. Waterford, on the other hand, went for it, as they always do against Dublin. So I feel just on the back of that, and also Waterford having Maria Delahunt, who again delivered at the weekend, she'll knock frees over. Tyrone did give away a lot of frees against Dublin, and I feel they'll probably do the same against Waterford. And I just feel Waterford have more passion maybe and drive and quality over the pitch, and they're a team who really, really see themselves as a senior outfit, and I would feel rightly so. And they don't want to be involved in a relegation battle, and they're a team who on their day I feel can make it hard for any of the top teams.
Right, well, we are out of time now, Nadine, so we're going to have to go, but that sounds like an absolutely cracking weekend of women's football. Looking forward to it and looking forward to chatting to you about it next week. We're going to take a very quick break now.
Your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
So SSC Electricity are on a mission to build a greener world, starting with supplying 100% green energy to homes and businesses across the island. They've launched a common goal with the help of Electricity League players David Cawley of Sligo Rovers and Sarah McKevitt of Cork City. Sarah, I'm going to go to you first. Can you tell us a little bit about what the common goal is?
So basically the common goal is just promoting sustainability and protecting the environment. So even myself, David and Tig, the three of us have been taking part in different challenges to promote this stuff. So even our first the first month of team was biodiversity, so that kind of involved us getting involved with biodiversity, growing our own vegetables, getting out into the open air and just discovering different ecosystems, so things like that, which is great to be part of.
Yeah, I'd say so. And I'd imagine as well, David, that you're learning quite a bit as you go along. And it's also probably very helpful as well for like the next generation, for the children that are coming through, for families.
Yeah, definitely. Something I wouldn't be familiar with myself, so I was delighted to get on board. I have three young kids myself, so, you know, they've been great help to me. They've took an interest in the challenges we've been doing. So, like you say, for the next generation, yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, the kids, because they are starting to learn about it in school a lot more than we are, so I'd say they're really keen to get on board with this.
Oh, big time. Massively in my house, I know they're always reminding me about certain things, like, you know, whether it's water and the veg and stuff like that. But no, they really took to it, and I'm delighted to get that they're learning about it as well, as well as myself, like, you know.
So watering the veg, Sarah, does that mean that you're having to grow veg then?
Yeah, so out in the back garden I was growing my own vegetables. I was growing lettuce, red cabbage and radishes. So the lettuce and red cabbage actually came out quite well for me, and I was able to make salads and actually make dishes out of it, whereas my radishes didn't actually grow. So I suppose it's a learning process as well. Some things aren't going to work for you. So, but it was great to be able to get out into the open air and grow your own vegetables and yeah, just learn something new.
Especially as well because, like, you're obviously a footballer, and all those kind of healthy living tips and growing your own veg would help to keeping that healthy lifestyle going off and on the pitch.
Yeah, if you're growing your own vegetables, you're going to end up eating them, so your diet, like, as a result, becomes better because you're including those vegetables in your diet daily then. So, yeah, it's a great way to actually promote healthy eating as well as just making use of the environment.
And David, if people do want to start making small changes, like, okay, maybe nothing too drastic, like grown radishes in the back garden, but do you have any tips for them, maybe just for little things that they can do, small changes that can they can make?
Yeah, well, we were doing a challenge there on water waste and trying our best, you know, not to waste as less water as we can. And with us not being able to shower now with the trainer going and stuff like that, so we're not allowed to use the showers, obviously, for social distancing. So, I'm always training home, get a shower, obviously. And it's quite a busy house here. There's obviously myself, my partner, and our three kids. So, what we're trying to do is limit the time on the showers. So, that's a small tip that we took in. I wouldn't spend too long in the showers anyway, but I've obviously a partner who would spend half the day in there.
She's going to love you for that.
She's around there. I think she's in the house listening to it. So. The two older girls I have would be as well. They're 8 and 6 coming, but they'd be the same. They'd spend half the day in the showers if they could. So just little tips like that. The one-year-old wouldn't be so much, like, she wouldn't be. There too much now, but just little tips like that we were doing on saving water. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And Sarah, if people want to find out any more information, where can they go?
Onto our social media, SSE Electricity. They have it all up on their Instagram. Even myself, David and Tig, we all have it all up on our Instagram as well, so for more information you can go on there.
Brilliant. Sarah McKevitt and David Cawley, thank you so much for joining us and best of luck in your games at the weekend as well. Sligo Rovers playing Cork City in the Cup, and Sarah is up against her former team Wexford Utes and then Piemont to follow, so two difficult games to come. That is all that we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow with the big lines preview. We'll also be continuing our build up to the Olympic Games. Tara Stewart is up next.